Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast about homebrew electronics and amateur radio. This is a program for people who like to melt solder and build their own rigs. For other episodes of the program, go to www.soldersmoke.com. For the latest Solder Smoke news, go to soldersmoke.blogspot.com. Please send feedback to n2cqr@yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke.
All right, let's see here. It is Monday, 11th October, 2010, Columbus Day in the United States. And that makes this, gentlemen, Solder Smoke 126, the first edition from Northern Virginia. Sorry for the long wait, guys. It's been a particularly rough move. I won't go into all the gory details, but it took us a while to get settled down, but here we are. I'm in the new shack. I'll describe it for you in a few minutes. It's very nice. Everybody is getting settled. Everybody's doing well. The family is fine. I'm happy to report. Very happy in the new location. And all is well. The new shack is kind of at ground level. It's not in the basement, but it's kind of in a part of the house that's a little bit below ground level. I can look out onto the backyard. And the backyard view is kind of out from under the porch, if you know what I mean. And the room itself is, I think, pretty comfortable. It's about, I don't know, maybe 10 by 15 feet, which is plenty big. I've got all the same workbench tables and operating tables that I had in Rome, and from some additional shelf space and one additional workbench. And right now I've been in the process of putting up shelving and getting everything organized. I'll get some pictures together and put them on the blog here as soon as I can. But, you know, I feel bad about not getting another Solder Smoke out. And before I left Rome, I had said that I was going to take a long hiatus and organize myself and get all the software and the hardware together before I sat down and started producing new editions of Solder Smoke. But I've been getting a lot of mail, and there are guys out there who are suffering from withdrawal symptoms. This is, of course, very gratifying to me, and I decided, let's just see if I can make a Solder Smoke on this Roadkill Tekra 8100 equipped with Linux, Ubuntu, Jaunty Jackalope. See if I can use Audacity to produce a Solder Smoke with this system. So it took me a while to play with the software, but it seems to be recording. It seems to be doing it, guys. We'll find out. I don't know. We'll see if 126 works. This is the first ever Solder Smoke edition produced so far entirely with Linux. I think the Linux heads out there will appreciate that, and will like that a lot. There is actual radio amateur activity taking place here in the shack. It's not all software and Ubuntu and Linux and all that. I got my Drake 2B going. Let me flip a switch on here. I don't know if we can hear anything right now. Maybe 40 meters will be up. But I've been mostly listening to 75 meters in the morning on the Drake 2B. I have just a little piece of wire thrown out in the backyard. No formal and no serious antennas up yet, but enough to let me listen to 75 meters in the morning. Let's see here. I got it on, set it for AM. Let me put it on sideband here. I'm listening to some rag tours there. Forty's kind of noisy. It's a 7272 rag chew net. Yeah, so it's nice to have the Drake 2B on the air, and so I can listen to some real ham radio QSOs, but I haven't done that since I left Rome. And one thing I've really been enjoying is sort of the tech talk on 75, particularly 75 meter AM. Longtime listeners know that I've always been a big fan of AM, and getting back to the States here, back into the Northeast, gives me a chance to listen to some of those great AM QSOs on 75 meters mostly. And I'm happy to hear that that Tim, WA1HLR, is still on the air. I've heard him modulating several times here in the last week, and it's always interesting to hear Tim talk about the modulation systems and how to optimize a rig, and especially the big rigs, the big heavy metal plate modulated transmitters. He's the expert. He is the definite the guru out there, and his voice hasn't changed. It hasn't changed since I first started listening to him, probably around 1973. I can remember listening to him and the gang as a kid, and they were I guess a few years older than me. I was in high school. They were mostly in college at the time. And well, very, very happy to hear Tim still on the air. I also been listening to an SSB group that I always listened to before, and I checked in with these guys quite a bit. I've spoken to Tim a few times too, but on sideband, I've spoken to these guys probably less frequently. I've always been in the listening mode, and this is the a group that meets, I guess, around 3820 on sideband, and one of the ringleaders there is John KM1A. These are New England hams, and there's a few Canadians in there too. And it's always interesting. They're on just about every morning, and they have great conversations. Always a lot of fun to listen to. Always a lot of good tech talk in there. Al W1UX is also involved with this bunch, so I've been listening to them and been having fun doing that also. I have actually melted solder here in the shack, guys. I got up early, as I always do, but particularly early. Anyway, I dug up the little Da Vinci Code beacon transmitter. You know, this is the thing that started out as a frequency standard when I first got into QRSS in Rome a while back. And I needed something that I could set to the QRSS frequency and leave it there. These were in the dark days before I got a frequency counter. And I built this little oscillator, and I needed something to insulate it and insulate it well. And so I took a paperback copy of the book by who wrote the book? Is it David Brown? Oh, man, I'm sorry. Apologies to the author. But anyway, the Da Vinci Code. And the Da Vinci Code served as the insulator for this little oscillator. Then, later on, inspired by Hans Summers, I decided that I would put a real simple kind of A-stable multi-vibrator modulated QRSS transmitter on the air. And I built it around this oscillator, put a little, I think, two stages of RF amplification, and a little two-transistor A-stable multi-vibrator, a little LED in there to modulate the frequency modulate, to FSK modulate the transmitter. We had a long discussion about whether that diode was serving as a switch or as a varicap. I think in the end we decided that Hans was right and it's a varicap. So anyway, there it is, and I fired the thing up, and it didn't look like it was working right. The frequency counter wasn't showing anything really stable or significant. The scope didn't show the desired sinusoidal pattern there. And anyway, something was seriously wrong with this thing. Of course, this was good news because it gave me an opportunity to start troubleshooting. And when your transmitter's only got three stages in it or four stages in it, it's not that difficult. And I found out that the oscillator just wasn't. So the likely suspect was the FET. I popped in a new MPF 102 FET, and voila, there we had it. The thing was oscillating. So that was good. And got the thing on the air. I haven't been picked up by any of the grabbers yet. I don't have it on the air now. I want to work on the antenna a bit. The backyard here is has got some real dipole potential, guys. There's some big old tall trees here, and I think they're going to soon be supporting at least one multi-band dipole. I don't know about putting a tower up. I don't know. You know, I've never really been a tower guy, but there's potential here for wire antennas. So anyway, we'll work on that. Oh, I mentioned in a I was pleased to melt solder, change apart, do some troubleshooting. I feel like I'm getting back in the game here. You know what I mean? Let's see what else. Oh, I complained about my difficulty on the blog. I complained that I had difficulty down at the Home Depot finding a 110 to 220 converter transformer. Can you believe this? They don't sell this in Home Depot, even in a place like Northern Virginia, where just about every third person just moved here from someplace else. Well, I rummaged around the collection of cardboard boxes here, and I found at least one suitable transformer. So I have that going, and all the old British gear, all the stuff that I picked up at the Kempton Park Rally is now percolating along here nicely. I mentioned shelving. You know, when you're involved in a move such as the one we're into right now, when you come back to the States after a prolonged period in overseas, they give you back all the stuff that you put in storage over the years. And we've had three moves since we left the United States, and in each move we've placed stuff in storage. You know, you're in Virginia, and you know that there's some stuff that you're not going to need out there in the Azores, so boom, it goes into storage. Then you leave in the Azores, and there's some stuff you know that you're not going to need in London, and boom, that goes to another storage pile. Same thing when you're going from London to Rome. Anyway, we have these three piles of storage stuff out there, and it's been coming back to us kind of in dribs and drabs. We got the stuff that we put into storage 10 years ago when we left Virginia, and most of it, you know, can you imagine stuff you haven't seen in 10 years? Stuff you bought when your kids were little babies, and now they're almost teenagers. You think, what the heck was I thinking? Why did I buy that thing? What did we do with this? But some of it actually proves useful, and it was these really old, horrible bookcases that I picked up at some place or another, and now I've got them up on top of the workbench, and they're serving great. I have really nice shelves above the workbench, and the Kempton Park test gear is up there. The current limited power supply that Tony Fishpool helped me make, and that Maria painted in, I think she painted it in, yeah, she must have painted it in the UK. And my ham egg oscilloscope and all the good stuff is there, all now properly housed and very, very nice, but not very elegant, but functional shelving. So that's been really good. And of course the 220 to 110 converter is key to the whole operation here. Guys, I've had computer woes. I mean, I guess you've figured that out, given that I'm producing this thing on the Roadkill Tekra 8100 with Linux. I tried to fire up some of the computers that I was using in Rome, and it was just a no-go. One of my the last remaining Windows machine that I had functional went toes up, and I can hear the horrible sounds from the hard drive. Now, I backed everything up, so it's okay, but it's going to be, I think that thing has bitten the dust, so we're looking for some new computer equipment here. Thankfully, there's a little computer warehouse store here close by where they sell refurbished machines, so I'm going to take advantage of that and get some refurbished computer equipment here. I want to set up a proper studio for Solder Smoke. Brent sent me a nice graphic equalizer, so the audio improvements are already underway, and I hope to be producing more melodious tones here for you guys. Maybe a little bit less whistling. I just heard a little whistle there, a little less popping. I apologize. The audio on this one's going to be really bare bones. So anyway, thanks for those who are contributing to the Solder Smoke technical improvement effort. Hey, I've been even doing a little astronomy here. My wife says that astronomy is good for me. She says it puts me in a really kind of tranquil, contemplative mood, which I suppose is a good thing. And we have large trees in the yard here, and that's not good for it's good for antennas, but it's not good for astronomy. But even from here in Northern Virginia, even a mere 9 miles from the White House, in a really built-up area with a lot of light pollution, I could still get a pretty good look at some of the more prominent constellations and the planets, of course. And was out the other morning, and Orion, Capella and the kids, Perseus, Cassiopeia, the Pleiades. No planets in the morning, but I noticed from looking at Heavens Above website that Jupiter is up in the evening. So there's a potential for progress there, potential for astronomy there. And the telescope arrived in one piece, the mirror arrived in one piece, so that's good news. And this neighborhood has a real large quantity of kids, just Billy and Maria's age, and I think they're of an age where they'd still like to look through a telescope. So one of these evenings I'm going to get out and we're going to aim it at Jupiter and show them the Galilean moons. Let's see what else we got here. Oh, a few other things here. Solder Smoke the book. I'm going to put a plug in for the book, guys. We need to plug the book every once in a while. I'm told that, seeing as I didn't actually appear on Oprah, and we won't go into that, but I'm told that the key to success in the book business is not so much in the writing, but it's in the promoting, sadly. But the folks at Lulu are giving me the opportunity to launch my own sales. You know, they've been having their own sales. They've been having, we just got through the Columbus Day holiday discount sale and everything else. Now they're giving me the opportunity to name my own sales events. So I'm thinking about trying to select some dates from radio history or home brewing history or things like that. Things are dates that are of significance to us, and launching sales events on these days. I know that'll not exactly thrilling news, but I think it would be more fun than, having, Columbus Day weekend sale. It'd be far better to have, Marconi birthday weekend sale or something like that. Anyway, so I'll be working on that. But if you haven't picked up your copy of Solder Smoke, Global Adventures in Wireless Electronics, I recommend that you do so. Of course, I recommend that you do so because I wrote the thing. But I think you'd get a kick out of it. And if you're listening to this podcast, it's definitely your kind of book. Here's something I'm trying to find out. How many of you guys, how many listeners out there would be more inclined to pick up the book if it was available as a download? Because there's a possibility that I could make the book available as a download. And you'd get it instantly. And so if you think this would be something that would be of interest to you, let me know. And if I get enough positive responses, we'll talk to the suits at Lulu and see about getting Solder Smoke out in a digitized PDF or similar form. I think that would be kind of fun. But I only want to do it if I hear from folks that it would be a useful thing. I suspect that it may be useful for people who are living in places where the postal system is not all that swift. And I've been in many of these places. And if there are listeners out there who would otherwise buy the book or be interested in reading it but haven't ordered because of problems with the snail mail, let me know. And that'll help me make a decision about whether to release the book in digital download only form. Anyway, that's it on the book. It's been getting good reviews. People really like it, and I hope you'll enjoy it too. The book, by the way, is dedicated to Billy and Maria. And if you open the first few pages, you'll see a picture of the two of them. The picture was taken at Cambridge, at one of the colleges at Cambridge in the UK. And both of them are looking very kind of confident about the future. They're very kind of you know, very kind of, they've got kind of Cambridge looks to them both. And I said that it's dedicated to Billy and Maria, possible future winners of the Elser Mathis Cup, which is, of course, the cup that will be given to the first radio amateur to establish two-way communications with Mars. It's waiting for a winner. I hope, I say Billy and Maria, possible future winners. Anyway, enough on the book. Please, you could find it on the blog, that's soldersmoke.blogspot.com, or on SolderSmoke, just soldersmoke.com, and there'll be plenty of links there to the book place. Hey, speaking of literature, I didn't get a chance to really fully appreciate the 141 edition of Sprat. The winter 2009-2010 edition, in the chaos of the move and mail and where does the mail go and et cetera, I didn't spend enough time with this issue of Sprat, but Elisa brought it in to me the other day and she said, hey, you might have missed this one, and right she was, and so I just started looking through it, and what a treasure this one is. I particularly like this one, and I just because of the kind of increased amount of kind of philosophy in this one, and I suspect this is all heavily influenced by George Dobbs' G3RJV. He is, of course, the editor. But it seems like this issue, there's kind of an unusually high level of kind of philosophy and inspiration. For example, in the article by NA2HL, Bozidar Pasarik from Croatia, the article entitled Temperature Stabilized VFO, you know, with an article with a subject line like that, you wouldn't expect a whole lot of philosophy and kind of inspiration. You'd sort of expect the kind of down and dirty, just the technical stuff, and you know, that's it, and the schematic and circuit description, and you know, the way the old QST articles always were. But I'm really pleased that in this article we get some kind of philosophy and inspiration. And Bozidar, he's describing a circuit that was developed on the website of the India Radio Amateurs Club. And the article was written by VU3NSH and was titled Multipurpose VFO for Your Rigs. And VU3NSH finishes his article with this sentence: discovery consists of seeing what everyone has seen and thinking what nobody has thought. Very good. And thanks to the guys at Sprat and to NH2HL for sharing that with us. I'm going to look through here. There was something else in the philosophy department. Oh, then we have, of course, the article on the New England Code Talker by Michael AA1TJ, full of inspirational stuff. The project itself is an amazing inspiration. And let's see, the candlelight transceiver. This is one I think that had the some philosophy in it. I really like the this is it. Yeah, here's another article. And there's probably a lot more of this kind of stuff in this magazine. But this is the W1FB Memorial entry. The name of the article is "The Candlelight Transceiver: A Complete 80-meter CW three-valve radio station" by Oliver Borkowski, DF6MF, DL0VLP from Germany. And he describes this wonderful little rig. And he gives a concluding paragraph here, again, with a healthy dose of inspiration and philosophy. Working with this radio is far from the usual happy-go-lucky approach normally encountered with minimalist rigs. As C.F. Rocky, W9SCH, said it so truly, quote, any active QRP-er knows what can be done with 2 watts input and a good antenna. There are good chances for satisfactory operation with this simple but not primitive set. By the way, this is not a beginner's project. Working with glowing bottles is fascinating, and the layout is charming in its simplicity, but alignment needs experience. and some test equipment and a good deal of respect to high voltages. Death is so permanent. Indeed. The problem is you're gone so long. Thanks for that, Oliver, and thanks for sharing, and thanks for the guys in Spratt for passing that along again. Another reminder of the treasure that is Spratt and the GQRP Club. There's an article in there on the second valve QRP day by Colin Turner, G3VTT, with input from superstars like Hans G0 UPL and Mike Zero G0 BPU, John G8 SEQ, and the list goes on and on. This is the place to be for QRP homebrewers. And again, what a wonderful thing. I like this article by Rex W1REX, a Maine Yankee in Rishworth Court. Great stuff. And Members News by Chris Page, now N4CJ, G4BUE. Great stuff. All kinds of pictures of 500 kilohertz experiments. Man, just... I wish Spratt came out every day. Can we arrange that, George? Can we have a daily edition? All right, let's see. What else? Oh, speaking of reading, we're going to get a little bit of a book review here. In edition 126. Give me a second here. I got to step across the shack. All right. I've been riding to work on the on Washington, D.C. Metro train. Not that bad. My ride's not that long. Can't complain. I look for little books that I could stick in my pocket. Of course, Spratt is perfect, but... Well, you run out, as I was mentioning earlier. There just aren't enough of them. But I have this little book that's been kicking around in the shack for a while. It's called Gravity by George Gamow. And let's see, when was it published? I got it for $1.50 at one used bookstore place. And published in 1962. And it's, of course, as the title indicates, about gravity. It's written by the distinguished scientist George Gamow, who is from Ukraine, and then made his way to the United States and spent his professional life in the U.S. You know, I really like this little book for no other reason other than, I mean, I like the whole thing, but the best part of it is Chapter 3, which is entitled simply Calculus. And in Chapter 3, Gamow gives the best description of the calculus that I've ever read. And I've had calculus in school, and I've learned it, and I've understood at least the essential elements of it. I wouldn't say that I'm a whiz at it, but Gamow goes a step further and gives in about 10 or 15 pages the clearest description of where calculus came from, how the procedures that we use in calculus were developed, and the logic behind, especially the logic behind integration. And I just really liked it. So if you're out there and you come across Gamow's book, Gravity, and you're interested in deepening your knowledge of calculus or taking up calculus for the first time, I'd recommend it. It's really great, and Gamow, I think, must have had the knack. All right, what else going on here? Well, I know it's Hamfest season, and because I hear when I listen to the guys on 75 meters, people are talking about the different Hamfests they're going to. I haven't had a chance here. I've been up to my eyeballs in moving in and home improvements. But those of you who are heading off to Hamfest, have a good time, and hope you pick up some really good gear. Now I guess it's time for Solder Smoke Mailbag, and I think we're going to have to give a manual edition of the gong because I don't think I have the file with the "Ooh, that's awesome," but we'll get that going. So we'll pause now, and when we come back, it'll be time for Solder Smoke Mailbag.
Solder Smoke Mailbag.
Awesome.
Indeed. Hey, so I found the gong. Hey. All right, I thought that I might not be able to locate it, but what with the computer crash and everything else, but there it is. I found it. Dug it up on an old episode, and yeah, it just wouldn't be the show without the, ooh, that's awesome, comment to Billy there. So, okay, we banged the gong, but before I get started with the mailbag, a few other things I wanted to mention. First, about the new shack. I was thinking, this is, for me, shack number 7. I've had, this is the 7th shack that I've had in my ham radio life, starting from my teenage years in Congers, New York. Let's see, there's been the one in Congers, Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic, the one when we were back here in Virginia, then the one out in the Azores, then the shack in London, the Rome shack, and now back in Virginia for shack number 7. So we're hoping that 7 will be good luck. One of the things I like about this shack, especially in comparison with the apartment ham radio shack in Rome, is here I can have a door to the outside. I can just open the door and it goes right out to the carport, which is perfect because I don't have to step out into the rain. I step out into the carport, which seems very useful here in the shack. I'll be able to work on stuff that needs to be done out of doors, but under shelter. So also it gives me access to some storage. I have some, some of the really big, ugly stuff that you can't bring in or can't fit into the shack can go out in the carport or in the little attic space that we have above the carport. So it's just nice to be able to step outside in the shack after years of being cooped up in the kind of tiny micro apartment shack on the 5th floor there near Piazza San Cosimato. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not complaining about it. We miss it quite a bit. We're missing Rome big time. But it is nice to have a door to step outside. And this opens up not only the obvious antenna activities in the backyard, possibility of antenna activities in the backyard, but I can also do things like I was sitting here the other day and I looking around the shack, well, yesterday, as a matter of fact, and I saw the Volkswagen solar panels and the 7-amp-hour gel cell battery. I checked the voltage on the gel cell and it was way down. I think this was the result of my final round of QRSS beacon experiments, if you can call them that, out there in the Sabine Hills, north of Rome. So I said, well, the sun is shining, there's solar panels, I have a backyard now, let's grab that battery. And I took it outside, and well, I measured the voltage first, it was down about 5.6 volts, and so definitely needed some charging. And out we went, and just put those panels in the sun, hooked them up to the battery and left them there for a while. And I take a strange satisfaction in this. I don't know why. I don't know. It's like I'm producing my own electricity. I guess it's not hard to understand, but I like seeing those solar panels in the sun charging the battery there. eventually to be powering probably the HW8 or one of the QRSS beacons. But anyway, the little things that that make you happy in the ham radio business. Hey, listen, I have a question. I told you I've been listening on 75. Let me see, I got the rig on now. But I notice a Spanish language time signal down kind of around 3820, 3810, 3815. Where is that coming from? Does anybody know where that it's in Spanish language and he's just constantly repeating the time? It's a time signal around 3820. In Spanish, and I'm wondering where that's coming from. If anybody can fill me in, that'd be great. All right, now let's see. Now, okay, I'm not going to bang the gong again, but it is time now for Solder Smoke Mailbag. And of course, we've been away so long that the real mailbag would be enormous. So I've just made a selection of some of the emails that have come in over the last few months. Brent, KD0GLS, I mentioned earlier that he had contributed a graphic equalizer to Solder Smoke's battle against popping P's and sibilant S's. And I really got a kick out of one of his emails because he addressed me as the grand poobah of the Solder Smoke Brotherhood.
I think this is a reference to Jackie Gleason's The Honeymooners. They were members of the lodge, and the head of the lodge was the Grand Poobah. So I thank you, Brent, for bestowing that honor upon me. And I think I put on the blog that as soon as I was named Grand Poobah of the Sutter Smoke Brotherhood, I felt immediate pressure to produce another Sutter Smoke episode. So here we are. Our friend in Guadalajara, Roberto XE1GXG, picked up a copy of Experimental Methods in RF Design at the Guadalajara ITU conference. Great, probably one of the most important events there at the ITU conference. Roberto getting EMRFD. He sent a nice picture of him and some of the gang down there in Guadalajara. It looks great, and glad you got the book. Thanks for the email, Roberto. I still owe you some toroidal transformers, or toroidal cores, anyway, and I'll try to get to them once I, get all the rubble straightened out. Stephen W-E-5-K, he got another book that we always talk about here, SSDRA, and I think Wes was kidding me, saying that it's really SSD, but I use the full title, SSDRA. Little editorial license here. Anyway, he picked up SSDRA for $10 at a Hamfest. And congratulations, Stephen. Glad to hear that you've now joined the ranks of those who have their retirement savings invested in worthy products such as SSDRE, Drake 2Bs, Holocrafters HT37s. I was thinking maybe we should form a mutual fund of some sort. This would be kind of a weird investment option. Who knows? Jason, W6IEE, has set up a new Google discussion group. This is one of the Google groups. It's sort of a kind of an updated version of the Usenet groups. And it's called Homebrew Dual Sideband. Homebrew Dual Sideband, with lots of discussion of the of DSB rigs, and especially the Cuban rigs. You know, Arnie Corvo, Arnie down there, CO2KK in Cuba, has been writing from time to time about the double sideband rigs used by Cuban radio amateurs, all homebrew, of course. So I think you'll find a lot of really interesting discussion in that group. And if you just go to Google Groups and plug in search for Homebrew Dual Sideband, you'll be taken to the place where you get all the instructions on how to join. We got another message from Brent, KD0GLS. He's looking for links to some of the Gene Shepherd ham radio episodes. Brent was going through some of the old Solder Smoke episodes and came across references to some of the Gene Shepherd programs, and then found that the links were dead. I'm going to take a look at my own blog. I probably have some good links up to the Gene Shepherd shows. I'll check again. You can search for Gene Shepherd on the blog there, Brent, if I don't get around to it. But take a look, and I'm sure we'll be able to find them for you. This reminds me, another listener wrote in asking for an updated site of an interview from many years ago, Farhan's interview on CNN. There was an interview done with our friend Farhan on CNN, on CNN World, and I had it on the site for a long time, but apparently the video link has gone down. So if anybody has a copy of this video, somebody was asking for it, and I liked it very much. It's from a while back, but it was great to see Farhan there being interviewed on CNN about I think about the BitX 20. Okay, and then we have an email from Doug, WB5TKI. He just finished the book, Solder Smoke, Global Adventures in Wireless Electronics, and he liked it very much. And from his comments, Doug, it's obvious that you are a victim of the knack. We got a really nice email from a guy who's written in a couple times before, Bert, WF7I. He's the leader, I guess he's a faculty advisor of the University of Virginia Charlottesville Ham Radio Club. And he's been sharing with us tales of antenna derring do of him
and the members of the club going out there trying to put up a rhombic. And they put all the wire together. They went out in the woods, out there among the bugs and the bees and the poison ivy, and they managed to get a significant portion of that rhombic up in the trees. I think pretty high up in the trees too. And just as they completed a major portion of the project, Bert, the faculty advisor, realized that they had put a good portion of it far too close to a bicycle path, and that if anything happened to that that wire, the bicycle would probably the wire would probably be coming down. I guess I imagined it just about neck high across the bicycle path. Not good. You know, there are radio amateurs out there who would have said, "Well, that's the risk we have to take." But not Bert. Bert's a good guy, a diligent, good citizen, and down came the antenna. Can you imagine that? You get a rhombic up in the trees, you're ready to go, but then conscience strikes, and no, the rhombic comes back down. He's going to make another attempt in the fall. Who knows? It might be completed by the time this podcast reaches you, but if not, good luck with the fall attempt at the rhombic. Bert, maybe you're waiting for the leaves to come down. That might be a good idea. And watch out for those bike paths. Michael, AA1TJ, the poet laureate of QRP, the hero of the Hobbit Hole from snowy Vermont. Well, not snowy yet, I don't think, but surely the leaves are changing. Hey, Michael was spent some time over the summer in what he refers to as Planet Gamatron. Something to do with a weird tube. I can't quite remember, but I remember when I read the message about Planet Gamatron, I sent him a one-word response: Gadzooks. You know, that's one of those words that you have to use every once in a while, and I don't know the origin, but it sort of reminds me of Gene Shepard's Excelsior. Gadzooks. Billy and I are always talking about a character for kind of a kid's book that we could put together. And the main character is, I'll reveal it here, his name is Excelsior G. Whiz, and the G stands for Gadzooks. I hope you come back from Planet Gamatron, Michael, and I hope the summer's gone well for you. Got a real nice email from Andrew, VK6JBL. Andrew is almost literally following in my footsteps because he's getting ready for a big move from one country to another country. In his case, he's going from Switzerland to Australia, which is quite a trip. And just as occurred in my case, shortly before the adventure in packing and moving was to commence, he managed to break his foot. In my case, it was, of course, the Achilles tendon, but the effect's the same. And he had himself in a cast and with a broken foot, just as all the stress and angst of moving was about to kick in. But he took advantage of his convalescence and built a Superhet receiver. He modeled it all in LT Spice, which is a great thing. And he was looking for a name. I think he took inspiration from the fact that I wanted to call my my little digital mode rig the Achilles, and he wants to call his the Metatarsal. Good one, Andrew. Good luck with the move, old man. Hang in there. And finally, we got a nice email from Dave K5YFO, and he wrote that he was. It was with regret that he heard about my move away from Italy and out of the Sabine Hills and all that. Yeah, I know. Well, you know, we regret it too, Dave. It's good to be back in the USA, and we're happy here, but we do miss Italy. And I guess everybody who gets attached to that country misses it when they go. Who knows? But we have vague plans of a return to the Italian peninsula. So we'll keep you posted on that. Nothing imminent here, but one of these days. Anyway, Dave was his dad was stationed in Italy. I think he set up near Trieste for many years, and it was during that period of their lives when his dad got back into ham radio and got him interested in the hobby. So Dave's first exposure to ham radio, or first knack experience, took place while they were stationed in Italy, which of course I'm sure adds to the fond memories that they have of that beautiful country. All right, guys, let's see. Looking at the clock here, we still got we're at about 45 minutes, and it's going to take me a while to get completely back up to speed here, get back into the solder smoke routine, but I wanted to get this one episode together because so much time has passed. But I know what we can talk about next time. This week, our final shipment arrives. That sounds kind of scary, doesn't it? The final shipment? Anyway, we have a whole bunch of stuff that went into storage, and it's coming out. And I have a lot of old boat anchor rigs there. I've prepared this new shack. I've prepared shack number 7 to receive these ancient and treasured items. You know you're a real ham radio guy when, you know, the shipments come in and all of our family heirlooms came in, and all the furniture and all the kids' stuff and all the pictures of the kids and all the important stuff that you don't want to lose. You know what I was looking for? You guys know what I was looking for. The one box that I was hoping somehow didn't fall into the Atlantic Ocean or the Med. You know what I was looking for? I was looking for the Drake 2B. I was. As soon as I saw the Drake 2B box, I said, okay, we're good. Baby pictures, all that stuff, college diplomas, the Drake 2B's here. We're all right. Anyway, on the same note, this week, this Thursday, we have the shipment coming in from storage, and I dug up the paperwork on what we have in there. God, there's all kinds of stuff. There's 3,000 pounds worth of stuff in storage. I don't know where we're going to put it. But I did notice the listing of ham radio equipment that is included in that package. And guys, brace yourself. A DX-40, a DX-60, a Heathkit VF-1. Now, I've joked about this before. I don't think the DX-40, the DX-60, and the VF-1 quite add up to a DX-100, but they come pretty close. Then, this one, I think, might have to go to use, or at least go on the Variac almost immediately. The Helicrafters HT-37. This is the transmitter that for many decades was paired up with the Drake 2B, not only in my shack, but in ham shacks around the United States and around the world. It seemed that these two, this transmitter-receive combination, they seemed to be fated, not designed, but fated to go together. Because I found that a Drake 2B with the 2BQ Q multiplier speaker will fit almost exactly on top of a Helicrafters HT-37. Now, I know this is not the best heat management scheme, but it looks really, really cool. It takes up a minimum amount of space, if you can take up a minimum amount of space with an HT-37 on the operating bench. So when that HT-37 comes here, I know some of those caps are going to go pop. It's been a long time, and some of them were in pretty rough shape to begin with. Maybe I'll replace the capacitors, but I don't know. Maybe I won't. I don't want to start getting involved in high voltage again. But I think that HT-37 is going to go back in service. Also have a Hammerland HQ-100, real simple little receiver, perhaps too simple, but very cool looking with that Hammerland, the dual dial with the band spread in the front, really nice. And I have sort of the first ham radio receiver I ever owned, the Lafayette HA-600. Now, I actually had an HA-600A and wanted to buy one of those and thought I was buying one, but the guy who sold it to me apparently didn't catch the last A there. So I ended up with a Helicrafters HA-600, which I don't think is quite as good as the HA600A, but it looks just about the same and brings back fond memories of, I think it was Christmas 1971, something like that, my first exposure to the ham bands. A lot of this is detailed in the book Solder Smoke, Global Adventure in Wireless Electronics. I talk about how I treasured that little receiver and how I feared that even in the middle of the winter, it might be suddenly wiped out by a freak January lightning strike in Congress, New York. So every night, even though we were in the middle of the winter, I would disconnect the antenna connectors and ground them and make sure that nothing happened to that Lafayette HA600A with jeweled movements, by the way. Jeweled movements. And my brother always cracked up every time I mentioned the jeweled movements. It sounded really quite weird. All right, guys, there we go. That's Solder Smoke 126. We're back in action from Northern Virginia. Thanks for listening, and I hope to have some significantly improved audio for you over the weeks and, well, let's face it, months ahead. 7-3 from Northern Virginia.
Ciao, bravi ragazzi.